Om Shanti. As I came and sat in this hall, I was remembering the first time I came to Madhuban. And that was in 1976. And it was in this hall that Baba had come to meet us. And so I remember we were like sitting where Bridget wasn't even further back, and it was just the Madhuban Nivasis and us, the family, our family. And Didi used to sit on this side, and Adi, and Baba came, and you know, it was the first time for us to meet Bhaktada. And literally he had to say, "Come, come close." He had to actually call us close. And remembering those days and now, how much has changed. Because now he won't have to say, "Come close." He can't wait, you know, wait to get close. It's as though the soul is jumping out of its body to go close to Baba. And so the history hall is very, very special. You just come and sit here and you just transform. It's just so special because Baba has done so much in this hall. And I can't see Baba, but you can. I mean, I can see the history around, but just these two pictures, you know, with Baba and looking at the knowledge. And these are the pictures Baba talks about when he says those original pictures, this has got the knowledge on them, and those pictures, if they're taken abroad, the kind of service they will do, you know, and he speaks in the Murli. This is what he refers to, these pictures. I share a few of beautiful insights that I've been exposed to over the days that I have been here. And then maybe open it a little bit to chit-chat. But I'd like to share a few insights that really touch me very deeply. And they actually come from Dadi Janki, basically. And she was explaining Brahma Baba to someone. And she says, you know, Brahma Baba is not a guru. He is, you may see his picture around, his photograph around, but he's not a guru. And then she continued to say, actually, his face does four things. And this is why we have his picture, because it reminds us of four things. One, when we look at the face of Brahma Baba, what we see is his connection with God. Because this is something that Brahma Baba mastered, and that is unadulterated remembrance of Shiv Baba. So just by looking at his face, that is what comes to mind. The second thing that we look at, we see when we look at his face, is the teachings that came through him to teach us how to have a connection with Baba. So one is the first face. You know, they say the four faces of Brahma. The first face is his connection with God. The second phase is the teachings that came from him, or through him, from Shiv Baba, to teach us how to have a connection with Shiv Baba, or with God. The third phase is that both of them, Shiv Baba and Brahma Baba, are looking at us. They are looking at us in our perfect form, in our divine form, as a constant reminder of what we have become. That state of completion that Baba talked about, that Daddy was talking about this morning. And the fourth face of Brahma, or when we look at Baba's face, we see him looking at the world. I thought that was so beautiful because it's actually his face reminds us exactly of what it is we have to do, but also what is the task that's being done in the world. And so she was saying that we do need that face of Brahma Baba in order to remind us of these four things. And so therefore the four faces of Brahma that have been remembered on the path of bhakti. I particularly liked when she said that Baba, Bap Dada, his eyes are always on us, because we've just completed a quality time dialogue in which the theme was seeing into being. And really, if we were to think of it, how much effort do we make to become what Baba wants us to become? I mean, most of the struggles that we have are efforts that are really connected to the growth, to the physical world. But once we can overcome our struggles at that physical level, our struggles of getting up for 4 o'clock meditations, our struggle of staying awake while we listen to the Murli, our struggles that I'm not what Baba is telling me I am, our struggles I don't speak the language of Hindi, so I'm not getting the fullness of what I'm hearing, the struggle of interpretation, all these that are really connected to the physical world, to our interaction with the physical. Once we can go beyond that or overcome that and really go into the subtler dimension, then we feel that kind of the efforts that actually that occur within that subtler domain are actually efforts that are blessed. It's efforts that are easy. We actually move. We actually are driven by Baba's blessings. So the power of that transformation that occurs comes from the Shakti, comes from the power that the soul receives from God, and that shouldn't be a struggle. Because as Daddy Gulzar said, once we are soul conscious, naturally the soul turns towards the Supreme Soul. That's a natural thing for the soul to do if the soul is soul conscious. And so when Baba looks at us, he actually brings his vision, his drishti, brings to the surface our divine core, or the divine being that we are. So if we were to just keep taking drishti from him and having faith that this is who we are divine beings, perhaps that's how it will happen. We will become that. Because his seeing us will bring that out of us, and we will become that being. And so it's not such a difficult thing to do, to become a divine being. We just have to have faith in ourselves. And that's where the difficulty lies. We don't have that faith, because we still see ourselves through the eyes of the world, and we don't see ourselves through the eyes of Baba. And that's what we have to learn to do, see ourselves through the eyes of Baba. And then Dadi was also describing Mama. And she was saying that the person was saying to her that, "I like the goddess Kali." And then, you know, instantly she kind of becomes alert. Oh, you know, you would sometimes feel that someone would say, "Oh, I like this," and it remains. She just listens and she lets it go. But not Daddy Janki. She has to give an explanation of what it is this person likes. So he said, "I like the goddess Kali." And she went, "Do you know who Kali is?" And so, you know, of course, Kali is seen as the fearsome one, as the one who's, you know, the image of Kali. Nobody likes to be Kali when they're having these nine goddesses, right? But Kali is the one who is fearless. And so she was describing Mama as being Kali. And she said something very nice about that. She says that Mama, when she came to the Yajna, she was like very young. And yet within a few years of being at the Yajna, she was called Mama, but she was still very young. She was about 18 years old when people started calling her Mama. And she says one of the reasons that she was called Mama so quickly, it is because that the sharpness of her intellect, of course, to take knowledge and to really imbibe it in the way that Baba was saying it, she didn't interpret it that way. She didn't use too much of interpretation of what it is he was saying. But she took it to the level of the practical very quickly, and so she was able to imbibe it. And so therefore, that gave her the fearlessness, the knowledge gave her, or the imbibing of the knowledge gave her that ability to become fearless. And what it was that she was fearless in, which is very interesting, was no one could deceive her. She was never afraid of being deceived, nor would she deceive another. And so that level of confidence that her intellect imbibed, that she would never be deceived, because she imbibed the truth in such a way that her intellect got that sharpness. But she says, at the same time, it takes one this courage to do that, and courage comes from being fearless of not being influenced by another. And think about it, sometimes we move around, even though we have knowledge, we move around that subtle fear, or maybe that subtle doubt, that I could be influenced, but she never had that. And that's why she became the Saraswati, the one who carried the veena, the one who played that musical instrument, because her intellect never had one iota of doubt, one shadow of a doubt, that she could have been deceived. The other side, she said, of Kali is the goddess of coolness, Sheetal. And she says her coolness was shown when people would come to her. They would come to her with their sorrows, their pains, their doubts, their insecurities, all these things they would come to her with. But as the goddess of coolness, she accepted them for who they are. And so she knew what they needed was not for her to say to them, you are in sorrow, or you are hopeless, or you are, you know, experiencing any of the negativities, but for her to tell them, or to let them feel, that whatever they were, as they were, it was fine. So that acceptance. And she says that acceptance that came from her coolness opened up that person to be nurtured. So how do I receive, how do I open myself to be nurtured? It was an interesting concept, it was an interesting insight for me. Because sometimes we want to be nurtured, we know we're going through things, but it almost becomes easy for us to stay in that kind of awareness of ourselves, this is all I'm worth. And so perhaps I need to stay in feeling sorry for myself, because somehow if I open myself to be nurtured, the expectations from others would be too much, or from the deities would suddenly become too much for me. So maybe it's easier for me to stay with my sorrow or with my pain or whatever it is that is giving me the sense of not feeling worthy. And so how do I open myself to be nurtured by another? What Daddy was saying is that we needed to feel accepted. But after feeling accepted, we don't shut the door again. We open ourselves to being nurtured and to allow ourselves to go through that change or the transformation. And she was linking it very much to what Baba was saying in this morning's Murli about the coolness of our sanskaras. It's almost as though the sanskaras, before they can go through the fire of transformation, has got to become cool. So it's one in which there's the goddess of coolness, but it is the idea of imbibing what the goddess of coolness is all about into my own sanskaras. And when I can allow my sanskaras to become cool, then the bossiness and the arrogance and whatever it is that's standing that's stopping me from transforming those sanskaras, that would then be will cool down then. It may not be eliminated, but at least it will cool down. I wouldn't use my arrogance to justify how I'm feeling. The sanskaras then won't deceive me. They would cool down. And then they would open me to see a different side of myself. And then I would have the urge to want to burn that which is stopping my growth, my arrogance, my bossiness, my anger, my pessimistic nature, or whatever it is. And so that for me was a very subtle, are you getting it? The subtlety of that opening to receive by that coolness in myself. Because once, you know, something is flaring up, the heat of it, sometimes using this concept, oh, I am Kali, and I'm going to go there, and I'm going to change myself with this determination. And I go there, and this is the fire of yoga, and it will burn this anger that I'm feeling. But perhaps what we're doing, we're using anger to burn anger. It is as though we're using fire to put fire out. Or we're using a stance, even if it's determination, it's something that I will take this in my control. So it's still I that I'm working with. I am still doing it for myself. Or I go to Baba and remind Baba, well, you'll have to do it for me. So this kind of a passion, this kind of an intensity that we move with in order to change ourselves sometimes work against us. So what she was saying is that cool yourself down. She was saying two things on the path. She says the path is a very steep one. But there are two qualities or two values that we have to hold on to, like the rails of walking this steep path up. One is humility, the other is truth. And so in walking the path, of course, it will be slippery, but if I hold on to these two rails, then I won't slip. And so within the whole recognition of transforming my sanskaras, the coolness has got to be linked to humility. Because many times we do not know what we need to do to change ourselves. It would have been easy if we did know. We think we do, but we don't. And this is why we have to go to Baba. We have to go and connect ourselves to Baba. And before we can connect ourselves to Baba, we have to be in that state of peace. We have to be in a cool state. And so then we can connect to Baba, to draw strength from Baba, to pick up the signals, and to be inspired, even though Baba doesn't want that, like that word inspired, but actually feel from Baba that we are receiving from him a strength that we could then understand through the Murlis what it is we have to do. And so we're removing our own manmat. We're removing what we think we have to do. What she was saying also, that the reason we're not able to do this is because the soul, she says, when you say the soul is heavy, what it is really that we are meaning, and when we say that the soul is heavy, it is because the soul is under the influence of external factors. And so to move away from the heaviness or the influences of external factors, again, I have to have a sense of internal coolness. Because that's what the soul is burning in, the intensity of the external world. And so I was, you know, churning on what she was saying, because really, bottom line is about this subtler dimension of transformation that we have to go through. Because I think for many of us, you know, okay, we're getting up at Amrit Vela, we're doing the basic things that Baba is asking us to do, but are we actually moving into the subtler dimension of our transformation? Are we really paying attention to those subtle things? And I think there are many domains a Brahmin would be operating in, or let me put it this way, our lifestyle as a Brahmin fits into a number of different domains. For many of us, the domain that we connect to the most is what we call the practical domain, or the domain of service. And we keep doing service because we feel that service is going to keep us connected to Baba. Actions, actions, actions. And so we involve ourselves in service. And so the quality of our service is good. But there, you know, what is the quality of the domain of listening to the Murlis? We have to look at that. Because, you know, I was looking at Dadi Janki this morning as she was reading the Murli. And she is like playing an instrument, you know. And she plays the instruments and she herself enjoys the music and she dances. And you can see how much she was enjoying it. And how much she was, you know, it was like she was reading it, but she was reading it for herself. She was reading it for us, but first and foremost, she was enjoying it. She was reading it for herself. And then how was it being received was the other factor in her reading that Murli. But we are on the receiving end. We're not reading the Murli, but we are listening to the Murli. And I think the quality of our lives as Brahmins have got to be improved at all the levels, and not just at the level I'm comfortable in. Because as Brahmins, we have also created our comfort zones. And one of the comfort zones for many Brahmins is the zone of service, of action. So if I keep, you know, doing the service, I'm comfortable, I'm doing something with my Brahmin life. There's another domain, and that is the domain of listening to the Murli. And how do I make it a comfortable domain for me so that when I'm listening to Baba's Murli, I am enjoying what Baba is saying to me for that day. The soul, you know, they always say that the Murli is like food to the soul. And when I am eating food, it is not just the digestion of the food. It's not just I'm taking in the right food, but it's the way I'm enjoying it as I'm eating it. And so the food of the Murli coming into the intellect and the intellect absorbing it, I have to also learn to enjoy listening to that Murli. Because it is listening, just like when Brahma Baba's eyes look at me and his actual drishti will draw from within me that divinity that I have inside. When the Murli is being spoken, it's the same thing that's happening, but I have to actually open myself to enjoy the Murli so that it draws from within me the subtler realizations that I would require to live by in my life. So for instance, when I will go into my traffic controls throughout the day, where would my intellect go as I'm observing those traffic controls throughout the day? What happens to me? If you observe others doing traffic control, which I did earlier today, it's interesting. You're not supposed to do that. You're supposed to go, you know, connect to some point you heard in the Murli in the morning. And then, you know, that would make you closer to Baba because you are using the food that you heard in the morning. You're reconnecting the intellect or the soul to that food, and it is being digested further into your system of the soul. But, you know, if you were to observe, you were to not do that, and you observe what's happening, within traffic control, somebody just keep doing what they're doing. Physically, it's not that withdrawal from action and connecting to Baba, but it is like continuing with your action. Now, you can't judge because someone continues doing their physical action. You're not mentally connecting to Baba. But for me, the traffic control is that it is to withdraw It's like the tortoise. You are withdrawing from your actions and you're connecting to Baba. So what are you connecting to Baba with is very important. And for me, it is an opportunity to reconnect to the Murli that I heard, or to a point of the Murli that I heard this morning, and then to use that as the basis to connect to Baba. And what that does for me, it allows me to deepen my listening of the Murli the following day. Because I think that when Baba speaks to us, every time we listen to him, every morning we listen to him, it's a deepening of our listening to what the soul would require for its nurturance of that day. And so that's another domain of our life, the domain of listening to Baba. And then I think that the call of the time, working with the call of the time, I've recognized how important silence is. Because I believe that it is in the domain of silence that transformation occurs. And transformation for me is a refinement that happens within the soul. The way that the soul sees itself, the way that the soul sees others, the way that the soul does, it shows up in its actions, it shows up in its behavior, it shows up in its attitude, it shows up in the way it speaks, it shows up in everything of the human being. And but getting it to that point of silence, again, it is not forcing the soul into that silence. So this domain of silence is a domain in which I don't know how much of it we really do explore. This morning, again, Nadi was saying that there are four things that are very important for us to understand and experience at a confidence age. One is the soul. Two is the supreme soul. Three is nature, in terms of the soul and the body, and, you know, the drama, the nature. And the fourth is the home. And she was saying, like this morning, Baba was saying, consider yourself a soul, and then remember me. Consider yourself a soul, remember me, and remember the home. And it is this practice of remembering, considering ourselves as a soul, sure. First of all, before we do anything, we have to be soul conscious. But then to take the intellect to Baba and to take the intellect to the home. And when we do that, we draw from the silence of the home that takes us into silence. So when we, you know, when people go to the call of the time people and they say there are different entry points, one would say, I play the cello. One would say, I go running. One would say, I read. One would say, these are all their entry points into silence. But for Brahmins, what is their entry point into silence? How do we enter silence? And silence is not just an empty observance. We need to enter into it. How do we enter into it? And this morning's Murli was actually telling it to us in a very beautiful way. He was saying that you enter into silence, first of all, being soul conscious, by remembering me, but in the home. So our entry point into silence is a bit introvert, you know, inverted. We enter it from the incorporeal region, which is a, you know, suddenly that light bulb went on in my head. It went on, yes, that's our entry point into silence. We're going into the home. And why I'm sharing these things with you, because I feel that we do need to go deeper in our own explorations, particularly being here in Madhavan. I mean, going into Baba's room, what am I feeling that's so different? What am I still occupied with? Is it still things that I've been doing in the world out there? Or is Baba going to give me a unique experience, a new experience? How do I separate myself? Maturana said something very interesting. He says, before you could reflect on something, you have to detach yourself from it. And so it's almost as though before I could reflect on my own divinity, I need to detach myself from my own self in terms of how I see myself and allow myself to be seen by another. Allow myself to be seen by Baba. So when I go into Baba's room, I'm not going in there saying, well, this is how I think about myself, Baba. And so turn the thing around and then reflect on what Baba wants us to see. What I said, in other words, reflect in the mirror of yourself, but in the mirror of Baba. Or reflect on yourself in the mirror of Baba. And so you'll see a different you every time. And one final thing before I open it to you is that another question that was come to Daddy. What is it? What is the quality of the soul that reconnects us to God and disconnects us from God? And I was very interested in the answer because I was convinced it was love. That quality in the soul is love, and that connects us to Baba. And it is when we lost that love that we got disconnected from Baba. And Daddy didn't see love. You know what she said? Purity. And she says that when the soul comes from the incorporeal world, the soul is coming as a pure soul. And then through its birth and rebirth, that purity was lost. And so we got disconnected from God in that way. So when we come back to the confluence age to get ourselves reconnected to God, we've got to work on our purity. And you know, for us, what purity means, we have got to clean up the mess we made. So the birth after birth after birth that we went through. And it's that purity that then reconnects us to God. The cleanliness of becoming like Baba. So I'll stop there. Because I've thrown out a lot of stones in the lake of your mind, and I've created ripples, I know. But that was the intent. But the intent was also to make you think a little bit deeper of where it is Papa wants us to go. Because it's a big task. It requires a lot of refined instruments. And so there will be instruments, as Daddy was saying, who can make this happen quickly in the sense of their own transformation and less of going out there to actively make a difference. But it's more to make a difference from my internal transformation, from my way of being, from my presence. And we all know that someone was saying yesterday, I don't remember who it was, that look at the decades of expansion that happened since 1969. And so Brahma Baba became Avyakt, but Brahma Baba is still serving. And so from that level of service that he attained in 1969, the level of his being, and look at how service grew over the year and how it expanded. And so that his presence is still serving. His presence is still holding the whole thing together. I mean, you talk to the daddies. And what do they say? What does Daddy G will be coming soon? And she always says, I wake up in the morning and I say to Baba, Baba, what do you want me to do today? She doesn't do anything. She doesn't even think without consulting with Baba first. And so Brahma Baba's presence, that state of being, that state of perfection that he attained, is still holding the whole thing together. And so just think, if we can be 10%, or we can be 25%, or it could be whatever percent, but with that purity of intent, wanting to serve like he serves, what kind of accomplishment would happen in terms of serving the world? Om Shanti. And they were talking about the soul and the body. And of course, he is into the body, and God is into the soul. But they have these conversations and they bring it together. And so the analogy he gave to her was, she told him that the soul was like the player, the body was like the musical instrument. And so the musical instrument was there. And the individual had to play it. And as the individual plays it, the music, the rhythm and everything gets created. And so that's what the body is. The body is the instrument, and then the soul has to play the instrument. And she was saying it very beautifully. The soul has to play in such a way that it conveys what it's playing through the organs of the body. And so whatever is being played, if it wants to convey love, it would be a feeling in the heart, the organ of the heart. That feeling would be understood by the brain, and then it would be transmitted to the eyes. So that experience of what the soul is playing, the soul is using its organs to do it. And then he said, of course, you know, he's still into the biology, and he says, well, if you look at a player playing the instrument, the player is one, and the instrument is one, sure. But after the music is created, you don't really think about the instrument or the player. You kind of only think about music. Like you get caught up in the music of it. So in other words, isn't it the same thing? Ultimately, once the music gets created, it doesn't matter anymore the separateness of the player and the instrument. It all becomes one. And you can't separate it. And so, it was fascinating, but she didn't have the chance to reply and to go deeper into it. Because it's like the, I was thinking when he said that, it's like the golden age. Now there's such perfect harmony between the purity of the soul and purity of the body that they work with that integration and the rhythm and the beauty and the harmony as though it's a music that's being played. So we don't really, have a problem at that time in the golden age. It's everything we just enjoy. But right now, I suppose this is where Daddy would have gone if she didn't have to leave. She said there is a discord in the music. And so once that discord has happened, then we have to go back and say, well, what went wrong with the instrument and what went wrong with the player? Now, why is this discord created? But it's like an evolution you're seeing that's happening in someone's journey in which the aspects of the soul is suddenly being touched in themselves. And that's the beauty about learning spiritual things. And that's what he said to her. He says, when I talk to you about these things, I can only talk to you in the practical domain. Because it is only in this domain that it makes sense. I wouldn't go referring to things I have read, because you don't go referring to things that you've read, you know, like two experts in the field of spirituality and science. I'm going to tell you all the reference that I have, so you can tell me the reference that you had. And then she said, well, you know, there was a person who came once, and Dhamma Baba used to speak the knowledge. He never read the Murlis. He used to speak the Murlis. And there was this person who came, and he said, I can't believe that you are saying all these things without studying them before. And so he followed Brahma Baba for a couple of days, and then eventually he went into Brahma Baba's room, and he said, let me see in your cupboards let me see what you have in your cupboards. When he opened the cupboards, he saw four sets of clothes and very little. And he couldn't believe that he was saying all these things without studying some scripture or taking it from some text. And so Daddy says, well, this is the only domain that you can speak in. Because whatever comes from, you know, Baba, whatever, he had to practice it first. He had to, it's something that really came from that domain. And so this is why at the beginning, the soul, the knowledge on the soul wasn't a comprehensive knowledge base. It was, you are a soul, a point of light, go on that rock and practice it. Sit on that rock and practice it and come back and tell me what you felt, what you experienced. It was very into the experiential. And I think this is what sometimes so mind-blowing or boggling about the knowledge here is that it only makes sense when you apply it to your life. And that is where the truth then gets revealed from. And, you know, it's not just studying for research in the sense of proving something. But it's a knowledge that must be applied for it to make sense to the person studying it. Otherwise it doesn't. It's very much applied knowledge here. Right. And just study the knowledge and give a beautiful talk about it. It wouldn't impact. If it were spoken, it made sense because you felt it. Experience it in it. Mm-hmm. 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 And the, I know we're going to do traffic control in a minute, so what fascinated me too was the physical eyes were able to see things differently when the person had love inside. So this is the whole idea about transformation, is that when we are soul conscious and we take power from Baba or power from God, elevated actions are very important for the samskaras to be transformed. You know, there's a transformation that occurs at the level that I connect to, that subtle level. So I will feel love from God, or I will feel there's a sense of purification taking place when I'm in meditation. But if that doesn't get manifested in my behavior and through my actions, then how, you know, the samskaras are going to be transformed. Because it's that cycle. When I think and I feel and I decide to do something and I perform an action, that action leaves an impression that becomes a sanskara. So to change that sanskara, I do need to manifest it through my body. So of course it's an integration of both. But then Baba also says that, you know, God works with human souls and God works with nature. And so the arrogance of the human being that I can change nature is no longer there, because we are part of a bigger transformational process that's taking place. But we are not the controllers of that, in that sense. Any other insights you want to share? So what are you, how are you preparing yourself? What are you doing? Do you have any? Are you just enjoying Madhuban? What are you doing? Tricks. Well, traffic control obviously is one such, but I don't, it's more of a practice I think you need to have. And you know, once I said, I was reflecting on why I decided to stay in New York. Because New York is a city. It took me like 2 years before I even got the courage to travel on the subways. Even though I had lived in London for a number of years before, and I was never so intimidated by the public transport system like I was when I arrived in New York, and maybe because mid-70s, right, 76, 78, late 70s was when I went to New York. And at that time, there was a lot of talk about New York in terms of the crime rate and the violence, and every time you open the newspaper or you put on the news, was something happening in New York City. And I think consciously I took, I had a determined thought that whenever I would travel, the New York subway, I would practice being soul conscious. That was one. And secondly, I wouldn't put myself consciously in situations of danger, prove that I'm soul conscious. In other words, I wouldn't go down Harlem in the middle of the night and say, let me see if my soul's consciousness is working, or something like that. And so that's how I think I come to the fear, that if I have to live in the city, I cannot be afraid of the city. And the way that I can conquer the fear is to be soul conscious. It's a practice, that simple thing of being soul conscious. And so that's how I do it. So it's not just about traffic control, but I think it's a deeper understanding of a practice that would allow me to live in a place and to serve the people of that place without being afraid of my environment. And I think that that's how I do it. That's a trick. In the sense that I took a practice and I made a commitment to it. And with that determination, lived in the city. And so now, you know, it's as though that practice in a way, when you do it, it kind of opened up, you know, a different way of seeing the place and a different way of, you know, when we're traveling in the place. We live in where we live in New York City, it's called Elmhurst, Queens. It's one of the places in which it's the most ethnic groups in terms of different varieties, diversity that exists in New York. But there's an integration, a beautiful integration, as they say, if you were to read about New York, Elmhurst and Jackson Heights. But it's also the hub of the drug trafficking and drug intake or whatever. But we've been living there since 1982. And it's almost as if, even if you're walking down the street, you know, you come home late and you see it, but you're walking in that, like, that what we call the social protection of Baba. You are being soul conscious. And you are treating people and you are looking at people with that vision. You don't have to fear, I don't know if Julia ever gets afraid coming home, but I do, and we're traveling in the same stuff at 10 o'clock at night sometimes, 10:30. And so I think that's the trick, to know that when you are in that consciousness, there is a protection that occurs, and there is a vision that you're looking at the other with that is holding them in some kind of a respect as well. And so the fear isn't there that they're going to do something to you. Exactly. You're not sending it out, so you're not, you know, panicking. And so that's our trick. Very simple trick. Everybody knows about it. It's not a secret trick. All right. So what did you hear Baba say to you this morning? What did he say to you this morning that you were so fascinated by, Murli? That you just couldn't get it out of your mind. It touched, you know, it struck such a deep chord within you that you just couldn't get it out of your mind. For the past, present, and the future. If you didn't have any desires, it is then that you will have all attainments. But I think that when Daddy talks about the three aspects of time, is that she knows that from our past, from our experiences of the past, that we carry a lot of unfulfilled desires. And so when we move into the present, we still move into the present influenced by those unfulfilled desires. And so we are not able to perhaps see the fullness that the nows are the present of the opportunity of the present. Because we are still somehow influenced by an unfulfilled past desire. So what she's saying is that use the present, put the past aside. Okay, that's finished. That's already been lived. That's dead in a way. We're carrying with us the memories of that. Okay. So if you want, if the soul has an unfulfilled desire, if there's an attainment that the soul is still seeking, then the way to do it is, as she was saying, go to Baba. And the soul will then have whatever unfulfilled desires the souls have fulfilled, but not chained to its past. So it's releasing itself from the past. It's going to Baba. It's drawing power from Baba. It's getting its attainment from the relationship that it's connecting to Baba with. And then that, the desires that the soul has at whatever level will be fulfilled. And then that attainment, the fulfillment or the attainment from that practice will then determine a newness for the soul to take it into its future. That is what she was saying. If what I understood as a subtlety there, if I connect to Baba with an unfulfilled desire of the past, it becomes a block to receiving. It blocks me. So I go with an expectation then. And with that expectation blocks me from receiving in its fullness, the soul's fullness from the Supreme Soul. As much as possible, put a full stop. It's not a denial of my past, but it's a history that I've lived. And I don't necessarily want that history of my past to direct my future. So I'm going to use the present to make a difference. And this is in a way, you know, it's like I don't understand all the intricacies and complexities and complications of my past. I'm going to put it to rest for a minute and become as though plain, go to Baba, get the strength, open up a newness within my own self, experience something new and allow that to take me into the future. It gives me a new perception of my own self then. That would allow me to perhaps let go of things of the past that are standing in the way of my growth. Huh? But when you're reflecting, some of that will come up. It will emerge to show you. I always feel when I go inside to reflect, I may go in to reflect on an aspect of knowledge. Different people reflect differently. But if I take up a point from Baba's Murli and I go in, you call it churning or reflecting on that point. That point, he says, sometimes it becomes like the homeopathic medicine. It brings up a lot of stuff from within you that you need to deal with. So now when it comes up, of course, at that level, I could be looking at it and trying to understand it at a level that I can deal with it at that level. So that it doesn't have to, it's not a test and trial on the field of action. Someone has to press my button and then I know that I'm like this. But within my own silent reflection on myself, I'm spinning the cycle of self-realization then. So when I'm spinning that cycle, it wouldn't just be my divinity that would emerge, but it would be my duality, it would be my, you know, whatever is there, it would emerge. And so then I would, through a process of experiencing myself at a deeper level, of seeing myself through the vision that Baba has shown me of myself, then I would kind of make those adjustments and say, you know, well, this is not really me. You know, why do I always have to get impatient when someone tells me this? It's like knowing myself deeper. And now I'm going to say, okay, I need a little bit more peace. I need a little bit maybe understanding it differently, maybe giving them the benefit of the doubt, what it is. I kind of work with myself internally in my silence with this. And then when the test is always, when I come back on the field of action, when I'm not consciously connected to that kind of promise I made to myself not to react in a certain way, when I'm in a certain situation on the field of action, because then I would forget. It would go into like, it would merge into my soul, and then the test would come. And then I would know depending on my reaction, whether that transformation has occurred within me. And if I did react in the way that I felt I didn't want to, then again, it's another opportunity to go in and reflect further. So I think this idea of not becoming disillusioned because a pattern of behavior keeps repeating on the field of action. When I know that I can go in and reflect to make a difference in the next moment that I would have, or an opportunity I would have in the next moment to behave in a different way. And so I think that we have to be kind of patient with ourselves to know that transformation doesn't occur as rapidly as we would want it to. So we do have to have patience with ourselves. We do have to get to know ourselves better. We do have all the spiritual concepts and knowledge that we have to imbibe into ourselves. And that takes time. Sometimes things change more rapidly for some than for others. And this is why Baba, when he talks about sanskaras, he says sanskaras are sometimes so strong that it takes consistency in my churning or my yoga, the practice of my meditation, as well as consistency in behaving in a certain way. And it will require both to remove that sanskara or to transform that sanskara, that would bring it to the point that would, when I know that this is who I am, and it's not creating the discomfort for me inside. And then I know that's my natural state of being. And this is what I like about Raja Yoga meditation. It takes you back to a natural way of being. It doesn't make you into someone else or something else. It takes you back to being who you naturally are. And as soon as you feel that this is who I am naturally, then you know that that sanskara has been transformed. And what Baba is saying, it's not natural for a human being to feel silent and peaceless and be in sorrow. It's a natural way for a human being to be at peace, to be loving, you know, to feel that joy, to feel that respect. These are natural tendencies in the soul of a human being. It takes a little work, but I feel that it's easy work, it's not hard work. And sometimes we can get frustrated. But ultimately, we are the ones who've got to be aware, you know, of who we are, and then we are the ones who are responsible to act on that awareness. No one else can do it for us, unfortunately.